Welcome to The Joe Show. Host Joe Williams takes us on deep dives into European literary communities.
The three authors who appear in the following program all come from countries which formed part of the former Yugoslavia and have first-hand experience of its collapse. Crucially, however, given the theme of this discussion, each of them has used their writing as a means of processing these memories. Faruk Sehic is a Bosnian poet and novelist who served in the Bosnian army and participated as an active combatant in the conflict. He has sought to reconcile himself with the resulting trauma in his work, such as his novel Quiet Flows the Una. Ivana Bodrozic, also a poet and novelist, was 9 years old when the fighting broke out in her hometown of Vukovar in Croatia. The family was subsequently displaced and her father killed in the massacre of Vukovar. She has recounted the experience of growing up in displaced persons' accommodation in her highly autobiographical novel, The Hotel Tito. Goran Vojnović, meanwhile, is a Slovenian author who lived through the breakup of the former Yugoslavia and has explored how this seismic shift impacted personal and family relations across generations in novels such as Yugoslavia, My Fatherland and The Fig Tree. I could think of no three people better placed to discuss the potential and limits of literature to serve as an instrument for constructing healing or transformative narratives in the region.
Hello, welcome to Trafficker Europe Radio. My name's Joe Williams, and today it's my great pleasure to be hosting a very special episode of Trafficker Europe Radio with three authors from countries from the former Yugoslavia, where our topic today will be Pan-Yugoslavian narratives in literature and how these may offer some transformation or redemption, either personally or collectively. Rather than have me try and introduce our panelists, I prefer to turn it over to the authors themselves and ask them to introduce themselves to us, their background and their literary work so far. Faruk, could I please start with you and ask you to introduce yourself, please?
Okay, my name is Faruk Sehic. I currently live in Sarajevo. I'm prose writer, poet, and novelist. So far, I published in English one novel, Quiet Flows the Una, published in London by Istros Books, and another one is the short story collection Under Pressure. I'm also a journalist, and I'm editing books in my publishing house in Sarajevo, in Bybook. My main topics in my literature, war, nature, and memory.
Thank you very much. Let's turn to you now, Ivana. Could you please introduce yourselves to us?
Okay. Hello to all your listeners. My name is Ivana Bodrožić. I am a writer from Croatia. Currently, I live near Zagreb, the capital of Croatia, but originally I come from eastern Croatia, from Vukovar, which is a town that was most destroyed in a war of 90s. I wrote a novel called Hotel Tito. It's a story about growing up in a refugee camp, told from the eyes and the heart of a 9-year-old girl. At the end of the novel, she is 15. And the novel is dealing with the generation that was growing up during the war and, of course, with the topic of her father's missing. In my previous work, I published three novels. They've been all translated to English, and the last one, called Sons, Daughters, should be published next year in the American publishing house Seven Story Press. In my work, I'm also dealing with war and the war trauma, but not only with that. I'm very much interested in the relationship between society and the individual, which is not originally a topic, but I love it, and it's just inspiring me. And the last novel is much more about the problems in the family and the experience of LGBT population in Croatia. So, in shortly, I also write the poetry, and that would be all for my introduction.
Thank you so much. So, our third panelist, Goran Vojnović, could you please introduce yourself to us, please?
Yes, hello to everyone. I'm a film director and a writer from Ljubljana, Slovenia. I write about things that actually are defining me as a person, and the war is one of them. I lived in Ljubljana all my life, so I actually didn't live in the war zone. I was on the outskirts of war, so I don't see a war as my personal trauma. But the breakout of Yugoslavia and war that followed is something that actually changed my world and changed my life very much, and defined the way that I'm seeing this world, that I'm understanding a human being. So this is what I think I'm writing about, trying to understand actually what happened to all of us and how changed we are afterwards. So I keep returning to this subject, even though I write about many other things, but I'm probably going to continue to go back to this part of my life, because it still plays such an important role in, if not in my personal life, in the life of the world I'm living in.
Thank you. Yes, Goran, I've read that you've described your first two novels as screams, and then you've matured and evolved into The Fig Tree, which was more of a family saga set against the backdrop of the breakup of the former Yugoslavia. And sticking with you, Goran, several years ago, when Yugoslavia, My Homeland, was published in English, you were quoted in Literary Review as saying that the book Yugoslavia, My Fatherland was a child's eye view of the collapse of Yugoslavia from a generation living the consequences, trying to challenge our roles and that of our parents. So how do you feel about that statement now? Do you still feel that your generation is seeking to challenge its roles and that of its parents? Or has there been any development in your thinking in that respect?
Yes, I still think that my generation, or even writers younger than me, and not just writers, but people in general, are still dealing with all these things that happened in the 90s. Not just the war, but the rise of nationalism, the breakout of the entire world, the prevalence of some sentiments that was so foreign for a lot of people before the war, and they shock. I think my parents and many other people from their generation are still somehow living in a shock that their world so quickly collapsed and that some other world just reappeared and took over. So all those topics are still there, and I think that's why we still get a lot of books that are very close to what I'm writing. It's not that my generation told everything it has to be told, but I think younger generations, even though those generations that were born during or after the war, they somehow need to tell their story, because it was, as I said before, this war defined all of us in different ways, of course. My experience was completely different from one that Ivana's has, or Faruk has, of course. But it was so powerful, this experience, that you just can't walk on. You have to deal with it, no matter how big trauma you have or how lucky you were to escape a tragedy, or have you lived far away, or if you've been to the war very close. It's something I think as a writer you just have to deal in a certain way. You just have to find a way how to deal with it, and that does depend what kind of a writer you are. But I think that the obvious thing is that we are still writing about the Second World War, because we all understand that it's defining the world we were born into, if not to today's world. But this was something that was so huge, and it still dominates the way people are seeing themselves and how we understand each other and how we communicate in today's world.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Goran. And I want to turn now to you, Ivana, because you've also explored these themes of the intergenerational aspects of the conflict. As you explained in your introduction, The Hotel Tito, one of your works available in English translation, deals with the perspective of a child struggling to comprehend the causes of the conflict. How do you think that your generation generally seeks to recreate the experience of a childhood lived during conflict, or look forward from that experience, or make sense of that experience via various forms of art or literature?
Thank you for your question. I think it's a different position watching everything that is happening during the war through the eyes of a child or through the eyes of an adult person. First thing, because of the responsibility. My generation didn't get to choose anything neither on which part they will be, or do they want to start conflict, or do they want to stop conflict. They were just soaking up everything what was happening during the war. So definitely is something that gives you another reaction, not only to the war, but in the life, on the life in general, because that experience teaches you as a child that you don't have any moment to get decisions done. So you're just living your life, and then something happens and your life is distracted without any of your opinions or any of your decisions. So it's something that I think you need to deal later in your life with. In a way, it's maybe easier when you're a child, because kids, they have some kind of filter around themselves and they are very self-concentrated, especially in teenage years. So maybe the horror around them is not that much reflected in their lives. But later on, then comes those moments when you need to deal with everything what happened. The moment when you realize that it's not a problem in you, because you feel like you're not very much normal. And then realize that all world around you is not normal. So I think that's the breaking point in almost every individual of my generation. And then got to the point where you can trust that you have any control on your life, because your life experience taught you that you don't have any control in your life. And then you just need to accept and live how the world is around you. So I wanted to write something that will give the voice to that generation, because, and it's voice which you might like in other way, because when you are older person, when you are adult, you already have your political view, you have your all the other aspect of your person formed. But when you are a child, you're just trying to realize what is happening around you. And it's maybe easier to empathize with that voice, because it can give you to look to those things in other way, maybe in a way that we forgot when we are adults. So my point was just to give the voice to that generation and not to judge Croats are good, Serbs are bad, this one are that way, the other one on the other way. So I just wanted to point up what the society done to us, giving us this world that we need to live and handle in. That was my intention.
Thank you very much for that answer. You said a couple of things which I think really sum up some of the themes that I wanted to speak to, and that was finding a voice which you can empathize with and avoiding any kind of shallow moralism when you're talking about something as contentious and problematic and as traumatic as what we're talking about. And that leads me on very nicely to Farouk, because I think Farouk has succeeded in doing this in Quiet Flows Iuna. So Farouk, you're approaching the war from a different set of experiences as an active participant in the conflict. And as Ivana has expressed it, you've succeeded in finding a voice which can be empathized with, which as a reader you empathize with. When you read Quiet Flows Iuna, you're struck by the level of formal innovation in the book. It's very lyrical, it's very allegorical, it's also narrative, it's also unflinching in how it recounts the true horror of war and conflict, but it approaches this topic, this subject matter, in a highly artistically intelligent way, in a way that we can empathize with. So my question would be, how can authors or artists more generally exploit artistic resources and form to try and find useful and original ways of writing about war and conflict and violence?
Yes, my perspective is, my point of view is of one person who had a war experience as a soldier and officer. So I was already grown up person when war started in my country in 1992. So after the war, when I started to think about how I will make a transfer, what I can do with my experience, with my war experience. So I wanted to put it into some kind of literary form. And in the beginning, I find my my voice in the short poems, and then I switched to the short stories. Then at the end, I wrote a novel before 11 years. It's quite close to now. Before that novel, I wrote a short story book, and it was that two books are totally different. One book is very straightforward. It's straightforward stories. It's like you have camera on your shoulder and you see everything. You can see what is the average day on battle line. You can smell everything. You can use all your senses. But this other book that you refer on, Quiet Flows Luna, is different because the topics are different from this previous book of short stories. And it's dealing with not only with the war. It's you have two parts of the book. One is nature, and other part is the war, and they are mixed up. They are mixed up like the game of cards. And my aim was to make not story, because it's not a book with plot, with linear story. It's different kind of book because it's dealing with war trauma. It's dealing with how can one person be settled after the war and what to do with trauma inside that person. So the main problem was how to reconnect previous memories about previous life in Yugoslavia before the war, during the war, and after the war. How to make one bridge made of words. I put a lot of sub-themes, like small topics inside. It is very rich book in matter of topics. And it's nature. The nature is one of the main character in the book. And also other characters are like older people, like grandmother, or some kind of benevolent monsters. There is no people who are like middle-aged people. There is no middle-aged people in my novel. Because it shows my attitude toward that kind of class of people. My main character, he is much younger. He is not middle-aged. He is much younger because he is an active combatant. And of course, it's a story about one city on one river during different times and spaces. Because of that, there is no linear narrations in the book, and it's more. If I may say, not erratic, but not so consistent. It's like a movie with different screens, like one screen, then other screen. One screen is nature, other is war, and it's all mixed up.
Thank you. Thank you for that explanation. Yeah, I think all of that comes across very clearly in the book. And as you say, there's something quite seductive and inviting about the opening of the book, and it's like very poetic and a reflective meditation on nature and the river, and you're invited into this very kind of inviting and seductive world. And then once you're at home and feeling settled, with this very lyrical description of nature, a very idyllic kind of bucolic environment, then the conflict appears. And I think the effect is quite devastating, really. It's unflinching in how it recounts the tragedy and the violence and the trauma. Yet it's also it's transformative in the sense that it offers a very highly literary response to what do you do with these experiences? How do you incorporate yourself? How do you reconcile yourself with the past, the very difficult memories? And I think that's something that the book really triumphs in doing. And I wanted to stay then on the subject of form and what forms can be exploited and used to write usefully and originally about something as problematic and as traumatic as the conflicts in Yugoslavia. And I wanted to invite Ivana and Goran to talk about this too, because Ivana, for example, I think your most recent English translation book available in English translation is We Trade Our Nights for Someone Else's Days. And this is a political thriller, which uses the genre and the form of a political thriller to make critiques of political dysfunction and corruption. And Goran, as we've talked about, The Fig Tree is also a family saga, which primarily tells a very compelling story of, you know, several generations of a family, but also set against the backdrop of the breakup of the former Yugoslavia. So I wanted to invite Ivana and Goran to then share their thoughts on the relationship between art and artistic forms and processing trauma and approaching difficult subject matter. Ivana, why don't you start?
Okay. In generally, I think that you need to have a content that you want to write. I think that you, first as a writer, you have to say your truth about the world that you are seeing, about the experience that you are having. Although you can put the scenography in the Middle Age or, I don't know, on a distant planet, Pandora, but when you are writing about the trauma, about the loss, about the love, then you need to be faithful to yourself and you need to say the truth the way you see it. When you have that content, I think that form will adjust to the content. So for me, it's not the other way around. I'm not choosing the form and then trying to put some content in the form. There is a time when I feel that I have something to say and then I found that form which is organizing around my content. In the case of Hotel Tito, it was basically my story that I wanted to say. And although it's not 100% autobiographically, there is a lot of elements of biography. And I knew that true about the world that I wanted to say, it would be most convenient to tell it through the eyes and the heart of a young girl, because it was most natural for me to be in that position. And regarding the other novel, We Trade Our Night for Someone Else's Day, it's a political thriller, and I wanted to tell the story about the post-conflict society, post-war society. So for me, it wasn't the better way than to put it in a genre of a thriller, noir, or political crime novel, because that's the story, that's the true story about Croatia after the war. There is a lot of And there was a lot of corruption, war crimes that wasn't punished, and a lot of stuff like that. For me, it was most convenient to write in that genre. And maybe some other writers are functioning in other way. I would like to hear my colleagues, of course, but this is my way. I have first I need to know what do I want to say. And after that, the form is just organizing around that.
Thank you so much. Goran, would you like to contribute anything here?
Yes, I must say that for me, writing is not about a wish or feeling that you are obliged to say something or express something. Or, as I said, I don't have a personal trauma, but there is a certain need in me to deal with some topics. I often say that when I have a simple answer to some topics, I write a column for newspaper. I tell what I think, I express my views, political views or some other views. But the novels are actually my search for an answer I don't have. That's how I became a writer. I was a film director and I'm still a film director, but I felt a certain need to write about some things. At first, it just came out and what I wanted to find, it's maybe not so much a form, but the language in which I can express a certain story, a certain topic, or something I feel, something I cannot just simply put into few words and just publish it like a newspaper column or something. So what I need is a story and a language. So I often wait and for years sometimes before I find the right language for a certain story, because I need to hear my character. I need to hear my narrator. I need to just feel right when I hear my character telling his or her story. And it takes time because it's not that something is forcing me to write. I think being a writer in our part of the world is not something that you do for money or for some kind of social privileges. You do it because either you love it or either something forces you to write. I must say I'm lucky because I do love it and I have this urge to do it. But when there's no urge, I don't write novels. I don't write short stories. I do write columns because I'm paid for it and I have to do it every week. I have a contract, but I can go without it. I could probably go for months or even years without writing anything. But then something just forces me to start writing and start working on something. And then after I get the feeling what it is, after some sort of sketch appears in my head, when I see what this is going to be, then I start searching for proper language, proper form also, but mostly the language, the way the story is told. And then probably only then the real writer appears. The writer who says, okay, this guy needs the help, this guy needs to express himself, but now I, as a writer, I'm going to help him deal with it. Yeah, and I think this is what is happening to all of us in a way, just on different levels and different ways. But I think we all have a need, because I don't know a colleague of mine, either in Slovenia or in Croatia, Bosnia, that would write novels just for the fun or for the money, because there is no money here. So I think we are all doing this because we have to.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's all very crucial to highlight, to foreground, that there's something vital about the work of writing when you're trying to make sense of some difficult experiences. And I suppose, as you say, Goran, there are no simple answers. If there were simple answers, we wouldn't need long novels and books and things like this. I fully agree with that. So on the subject then of literature from the former Yugoslavian countries, I wanted to talk about now other authors. We've touched on this in the previous answers, how there's lots of authors, there's lots of literature and writing coming from the former Yugoslavian countries with their own idiosyncratic perspectives on how to approach this subject matter. And I just want to venture one example, which I found very effective, which was a book called Seven Terrors by a Bosnian author called Selvadin Avdic. That's another Istros Books title. One thing that came across very starkly in the book, and this echoes something that was alluded to before, I think, by you, Goran, when we said there's kind of the before and after when you're dealing with something as momentous as the breakup of a nation and civil war and conflict. And that's something that really happens in the book. Everything in the book is kind of doubled. There's two twins who are the antagonists, and everything has a before and a after. It's like after this conflict, after this tragic event, everything kind of splits and doubles, and everything has a shadow. And the book is about how the protagonist seeks to then incorporate with his shadow, to use that Jungian terminology. And he does something quite interesting formally, to just continue the conversation about form. He exploits the conventions of gothic horror and detective fiction to turn this tale of how you incorporate with your shadow, how you reconcile yourself with your own complicity in atrocities, perhaps all of our complicity in atrocities, in a kind of Albert Camus way that he does in his post-World War II literature. And he turns that story about how you reconcile yourself with that past into a gothic detective fiction, something like Edgar Allan Poe or something like this. And I found that a really original and startling, fresh, original way of writing about something as tragic and as difficult as this. And like I say, I feel it echoed Albert Camus, The Fall. And I think he's trying to say something about all of us, really. And he avoids in that way any kind of moral superiority or any kind of judgment. And there's something very relatable and something that you can empathize with. So I wanted now, if we could ask you to talk about any other authors or artists working in different forms. We could talk about visual art and media and film here, who you feel are worth mentioning at this point. Farouk, do you have any instances of authors or artists or anybody working in any form who you feel is doing something vital on this subject matter?
For me, it's one of the most important Bosnian artists is Jasmila Žbanić, of course, and she is a film movie maker, director, and she made a lot of movies about war trauma, about legacy, about this dark kind of legacy of the war, including she made the movies about war crimes, in particular about raping camps in East Bosnia. And I think that is the highly influential piece of art, because the movie, the film, it can reach more people. It has a wider reach. And in that movie of her, last one was the last year's candidate for the Oscar for foreign movies. And it is important because, for me personally, it's important because it's very similar to my way of thinking about what is happening here during the war. And I think it's important for us artists, not only writers, also musicians or painters or visual artists, it's important how will we represent our past, but mostly war past. It is important how we will deal with that. And for me, it's every book about these topics are important, even if they don't have so big quality. They can be like documentary books. Of course, if it's not nationalist books, and I accept that, but it's so big topic that it will last for generations. And it's like, I said, transgeneration, this transfer from one generation to another generation, transfer of trauma. Even people who are born after the war, they maybe don't want to deal with the war because they didn't born there in that period. But after they will grow up, they will be affected about past, at least about past of their parents. You can't erase the past. It's always there. Of course, I don't want to talk that it's important to write only about the past. I can write about full future, reflecting on past. I'm working on sci-fi, you know, it's sci-fi, but it's deeply in the past, not only in the past. It's because it's sci-fi. It allows me to make a mix about times and spaces.
Thank you very much. So on the subject then of ways in which artists and authors from the former Yugoslavia are using marshalling their respective artistic resources to try and recreate, reconstruct, reimagine the past or find ways of looking forward from the past. Goran, have you got any authors or artists that you would like to cite as important?
I could go on with a lot of writers that are somehow familiar to me from Croatian, Bosnian, Serbian writers, but maybe at this moment I would like to talk about two Slovenian writers, which I find very important for me personally. One of them is also published by Istros book, Dušan Šarotar. He's returning constantly to the same topics, not trauma, but the Second World War, when his grandfather, who was one of the members of the quite numerous Jewish population of the town Murska Sobota, was taken away, and he was one of only few people who was able to return, but all his family died. And Dušan keeps returning. Now he's written a third novel, great novel, and he just keeps returning. And he writes in you could almost compare his writing to Faruk's writing, because it's very lyrical, very poetic, but very powerful. And underneath there is this huge tragedy, the real tragedy. Of course, he's much more distanced from this tragedy than Faruk, but still, it's very powerful, very lyrical writing, very important one. And I'm very fond of the people where I see that this obsession with certain topics, they keep writing the same novel over and over and going in different forms, in different ways, because it's so important for them. The story, they just can't let it go. And there is my, unfortunately, late friend, Marko Sosic, who also kept returning. And it's still returning, because there's still one novel that has to be published that he left behind. Keeps returning to this family trauma, of his personal trauma, because part of his family didn't want to accept Bosnian refugees during the war. And it was he had some family that lived in Bosnia before the war. And when they flew from the war, his, I think, uncle, or I don't know exactly who, but somebody in the family didn't want to accept them, because they were Bosnians, of course. And he didn't do anything at the time. And he had such a guilty conscience about it that he kept returning to this and wrote, again, very lyrically, beautifully about it, but with so much pain about the war, about the consequences of war, and how even though you suppress all these stories, they just pop out again. And I think it's this kind of writing is very important, and it's because it's telling us that you cannot just go on. It's all this pain and traumas will keep popping up. They will come haunt you, like it haunted Marko or Dušan. And those novels are really important for me. I think this is some of the best writings in Slovenian language in recent 10, 20 years. And and in very great novels. But as I said, it's very close to me because I'm, as in a different way, of course, but I'm also keep returning to the same topics, like almost obsessively writing, in a way, same novel all over again. And that's what, when you really feel connected to something, it's not just, okay, I wrote about that already, now I'm going to write something else because my readers, they can't read all about war all the time. No, it's just stronger than you. And these two examples are, I think, really good examples of what literature can do, like telling you the same story all over again. But when I read now the novel of Dušan Šarotar, it was like reading the first time about it. And I knew the story from before. It's, of course, it's a different aspect, different period of this story. But it was so fresh, and it felt like it's so important for him to tell this story, even though he, in a way, told it already.
Thank you. Yes, yeah, I can identify with a lot of what you said. Interesting that you used the verb to haunt, because I think that, like I was mentioning with Seven Terrors by Selvadin, that's the kind of metaphor he uses, I think, in the book to describe these memories and these experiences as kind of spirits or ghosts haunting him and following him. And like I say, the narrative in the book, the arc in the book, is how he tries to find a form in which he can create some kind of resolution with that and resolve some of those traumas. So interesting use of verb there, haunt. Ivana, would you like to contribute anything at this point?
Yes, I could just agree with the things that Kolegnovic said, because we are the part of the same space. And I think that we cannot avoid either our history, either our present. But I think it's very important for us to be maybe much more connected, because when the Yugoslavia fell apart, it is not something that you can divide in one day or in several years or in several decades. We are now used to be focused on our differences, but there is a much, much more similarities between us, from going from a thing that we can easily understand each other, and that we are, if we are talking about the numbers, we are, I don't know, one city in the United States. We are not that big or that different like we want to think about ourselves. I think that looking to the past, looking to the other artists, what are they doing, it could be crucial for our perspective in the future, because it can reflect our own identity and it can make stronger our points that we want to share in our literature, in our film industry, in our telling stories in every way. So I think that could be something that we need to work on it.
Thank you very much. At this point, I'd like to now read from Quiet Flows Yuna, from Farouk, in English translation by Will Firth, available on Istrus Books. There had to be something that would withstand the erosion of time, something sturdier than my life and my body. Clothing was unreliable because it wore out so quickly. It grew thin like snow before the gusts of the south wind. It became threadbare beneath my clammy hands and from rain, sun and washing machine. I soon discarded my toys. There was no point in developing an intimate bond with them because they're only made to last for one phase of life. And when you outgrow them, they're simply pitiable. Why should I collect objects that will provoke pity in me? Nostalgia is a fine thing, but I needed something more. An object that would show no signs of wear and tear. A diamond pocketbook full of an alchemist's notes for saving the earth and for the advancement of humankind. The ultimate object into which I could integrate my subtlest feelings and in which I would build a shrine to my solitude. Being alone and enjoying solitude is a peak of intimacy with the world that surrounds me. But objects, chattels, jewellery and watches couldn't last. Everything of firm material was prone to destruction or disappearance. So what then could I rely on? I raised defensive walls of strong, futile objects in vain. I secluded myself among books and other beloved fetishes, and dust collected on them to warn me of the fragility of matter. A As soon as you make a world, a house, or a hut of sticks, it is doomed to failure. It was already doomed back when it was a black and white sketch in your head. That's why I began to believe in words. They cannot be destroyed. If you erase them, they come back. Words float in front of your eyes and won't retreat from the front line. If you set fire to them, they will burn with even greater ardour in your memory, and no memory wipers like alcohol or narcotics will get rid of them. Words are above destruction. If you erase them, they're right back at the tip of your tongue again. That's why I started describing just things that were important to me, like a maniac. The mounted tusks of a prize wild boar killed in the same year as I was born used to hang just inside the front door of the flat on the narrow strip of wall immediately on the right, above the light switch. When you pass the trophy, the living room door is directly to the right, and the hallway to my bedroom goes off parallel with the trophy. To the left of the bedroom is a narrow kitchen with its long window looking out onto terrace gardens full of lush green plants. If you continue on from the front door, that's the way to the bathroom and the toilet with cold, little, white tiles. My things are in particular places in the bedroom. The herbarium full of pressed leaves and a mass of flowers. My letters, the handwritten results of the 1982 Football World Cup in Spain, and erotic magazines are all stacked in the compartments of a massive X-shaped table with a stand in the middle. The table is upside down so as to take up less space and leans against the wall on one arm immediately behind the room's glass door. The moment I sit down in the lounge and start watching Hollywood faces smile with their gleaming white teeth on the screen, I'm not aware that they're actually long dead. It would take a whole book for me to describe just that lounge. An army of 100,000 words would have been enough to seize that space and jam it between the covers of a book. Now you know your way around my flat and could be part in its reconstituted three-dimensionality. I hope this act of description would make my objects firm and indestructible in the world that surrounded me, like an endless, dark forest. Everything that was gone forever could be rebuilt with words, I thought. I paid homage to my dead comrades, and thus reached an understanding with that part of my bereavement. But the loss of the pre-war world of emotions and the palpable objects that comprised it, living rooms, the universe of the intimate, books, time machines, and photographs, time conserved in crystal, was manifested for me as extreme pain. Writing would allow me to make myself a crutch, a substitute world. They say that books last longer than people, and I agree, but an ordinary copper hairpin is more durable than whole generations of people. As confounding as that is, I decided I would write down for myself everything that I dreamed and told the fakir where I came out of my hypnosis. I would use auto-hypnosis to make the memory of the seance come back and then, in a waking state, speak everything into a tape recorder. Later, I would put my fears into a book and thus incorporate myself into something that would last without any idea what purpose it would have for others. When I did that, I realized how far I'd strayed from my initial intention of linking up with my past, of feeling it with my hands as one would embrace the face of a beloved person, tenderly and with a tremble. I registered the changes I experienced during this journey in painstaking detail, not wanting to let anything go, not even those images of crimes I would prefer to bury at the remotest point of the Milky Way. No, I recorded them too. Every tiny detail I saw in my memory or reimagined in a random flashback can be made into a colour in life's fresco. The pine needles and buds of the white pine behind my grandmother's house could take on colour. After the war, we cut down that tree. As inexplicable as it is to me now, in the hope of starting back from square one, unaware that there is no square one, we stood forlornly at the smoking ruins of our former homes, in a state of enduring shock and accustomed to the brutality of what we saw. We were those shards from Guernica, living beings that walked the ruins, devoted to the automatisms of clearing away rubble and reordering the blighted town. That was the best we could do in our situation. My grandmother's house had been reduced to a mound of rubbish and only a pipe jutted up from where the kitchen sink used to be, with a trickle of water flowing from it for months after the war. When I touched sacred objects from my past and finally became whole, I was disturbed once more to realize that the war and its temporal spatial discontinuity weren't the only cause of my trauma. It was also caused by the tiny antennae that have spread all over my body, the layout of my nerves. I realized I was writing a book about melancholy. It is the shield of luminous words, the most lasting of all my belongings. If I was born somewhere in the West, this book wouldn't need to be a lyrical document, a novel with irrefutable facts. It could afford to be light reading about vampires, because objects endure in those lands, and public and private worlds are not prone to cyclical destruction as they are here. Even if one of the Western worlds is wiped out, it would be easy to replace, because there are technical drawings that enable it to be rebuilt. Everything there is recorded, preserved in archives, while here we're just at the beginning of the great adventure of noting and recording, and of resuming normal life. But we should always leave a little space for the possibility of fire and ice from heaven or from the earth, for caution's sake. It's all too easy to miss prophecy in unpredictable times. That's why I dream of a big book, in which all the people from these sad climes can be inscribed with their fears and hopes. One big book of the living that will be used for medicinal purposes. In that way, dreams and art shall become our strongest weapon. Thank you for choosing that, Farouk. That was an excerpt from Farouk's novel, Quiet Flows the Una, in English translation by Will Firth. Farouk, we heard an excerpt there which seems to speak to the enduring nature of literature and art, as opposed to the temporal nature of objects. Could I ask you to tell us why you chose that particular passage and why it's significant to the subject of this conversation?
It's because it explains a lot about my literary obsession. And one of my obsessions was to how to reclaim my past if I don't have photographs. So how can I show you that I have past? Because when you lose your photographs, it's like you don't have past. I don't have facts to show you, like some kind of post-war zombie or post-apocalyptic person, and that I had a rich life. And that my life was like your life in Leeds, in UK, or in Scotland. I was just the person of my generation. We listened all the same music, like, for example, New Wave. I was obsessed with how can I rebuild that past. And with words, it's easy. It's easy to resurrect, like, lost world or lost past. In literature, you can resurrect the persons also. Of course, not in real life. And that is the thing because of which I maybe became writer. Who knows? One of the things. And I was, even now, like Goran said, that we have our obsessions. Even now, when I write a new book, I have character, one character, who is like similar with this narrator in this book, in Quiet Flows the Una, because he wants to rebuild a lost past. And everything is happened in the future. It's not important, but he wants to write everything. He thinks that is possible to rebuild something which is lost, only with words. It's also reflect my strong belief in the writing, in the words, and my strong belief that we are important, even we can't be or became rich person. Just from the sales of our books. But it is like a quest. It's literary quest. And my quest is to collect all the pieces that I lost. And well, we are lost that also pieces. And that pieces was lost when our land disappeared and the war started in Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia, then later in Kosovo. And that is about it.
Thank you so much. So that leads me on nicely to the final question, and the, you know, overarching theme of this conversation is, can literature offer a way, as Farouk has described here, of recreating a past and reconstructing a past and moving forward then from the past, having reconstructed it via a human creative expression. And either Goran or Ivana, why don't you tell us what your opinion is? And if you do have a more pessimistic outlook, you can feel free to express that. I'm not going to put words in anybody's mouth. The theme of the conversation is redemption and transformation in narratives via human expression and creation. Please tell us whatever your take is on this, your opinion on this.
I must say that I love very much this Farouk's novel, Quiet Flows the Una, and my mother also. And I also love Goran Vojnović, Čefurić Raus. Those two novels are really close to me. And I love them because they are, in a way, novels written from male authors, but not macho novels. They have something against all this politics that leads us in the position where we are. And it's so, as Farouk would say, under the river. It's not something that you can see at the first or read at the first glance. It's the literature that really can change perspective. And it's the literature which you can see is much more successful because, in a way, it is trying to tell the story about all of us, not only the story of one nation or one position of one experience, but it's very rich in a lot of perspective and in different experience that it really can make a change. Those changes are not maybe large, or it's not something that it's crucial now, but I think they have a long distance impact on readers, and they have this long distance impact when we will watch our history back, not only the history of our nations, but the history of our literature. Those novels will be something that can give us the hope that we can rebuild something from that society. It is not this official narrative of war is not only the one that is counting. I always believe in the strength of literature, but not in a way that it could instantly save you, but it can give you the place where human dignity can be something that is really valuable. And I think that is in a lot of situations, it's something that we are turning back to. I'm not pessimistic in that way toward and regarding literature.
Thank you very much. Goran, would you like to share your perspective here? Perhaps one aspect to consider might be if any healing or transformation takes place at a collective level. We've talked a little bit about inherited trauma, how trauma can pass on between generations and is also shared amongst communities. One interesting aspect might be whether there could be any redemption from that at a collective level, or is it always going to be more a question of individual healing or redemption? And just feel free to share your perspectives on the theme of the conversation so far.
I must say I'm a little bit more pessimistic about the influence of literature, because I'm aware that the majority of the people you cannot reach with the literature. As Farouk said, with the films, it's much easier. But then again, I think in Slovenia that even films are less and less powerful. We don't have such a maybe strong film as a Quo Vadis Aida to show, to say, like, through these films, we were able to really engage people and touch them and make them think. So I must say that if I didn't believe in literature, I would stop writing it, probably forced myself to stop writing it. But I think these changes are, as Ivana said, they're happening on a personal level. It's a communication between the writer and the reader. And of course, it's very important for me personally to be a reader, to read Ivana's Hotel Zagorje, or Hotel Tito in English translation, or to read Farouk's work, to feel connected with them, to really, because in today's world, it's all very shallow. It's all the messages are really short and often stupid. And then you turn off all these computers and phones and you take the book in your hand and you spend a day, a two, or a month with an author. You're listening to what she or he has to say. And I think it's, for me, this is really important to have this kind of communication, which you rarely have even with the person you live with. And I think where I am optimistic is that more and more people will feel the need for this kind of communication. In this crazy world with Twitter, with Facebook, when everything is just jumping at you and you don't have even time to read it through the emails you're getting, you're just scrolling them. And to have this kind of form of really archaic communication, like from medieval age, I think people will realize how valuable all this is. And I will think that they will start returning to literature to really have this proper way of communication between two people. And this is what I'm optimistic about. But I'm pessimistic about if this can bring some change in the society, because I think we are more and more nowadays, we are ruled by people who don't read books. And I think we live in their world, not the other way around. So we can influence only a little bit, only people who are willing to be influenced. And nowadays, everybody is self-influenced, as I think, as I see it. So yeah, I'm pessimistic and optimistic at the same time, and hope this sounds logical, but yeah, that's how it is with me.
Yeah, that does sound logical, absolutely. Like you say, there are no simple answers. I think we're at the end here. I want to thank you all very much for such an enlightening and edifying conversation, and for sharing all your very deeply felt perspectives on this very important matter. Thank you very much.
This has been a panel discussion with authors from the former Yugoslavia, Ivana Bodrožić, Goran Vojnović, and Faruk Shahic, considering especially supranational ways forward for the region through the medium of literature.
The Joe Show is executive produced by Trafica Europe Radio. Please sign up on our site, traficaeurope.org/go/radio, to stay informed about our upcoming shows. From all of us here at Trafica Europe Radio, thanks for listening.